this Monday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live on this Big Red Monday from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what is going on, my friend? How are you?
Trying to figure out who that third musician is. I hope it's nobody we know.
Oh, the guy from the Cars died. Eddie Money died. We've had David Bowie died. We had
Prince.
Prince, Tom Petty.
But these,
Tom
Petty? These things happen in like threes, right? And
yeah.
And just in the last 72 hours or so, two very talented, very noteworthy musicians from the musical era in which we grew up passed away. I hope these things don't happen in thirds, that's for sure.
I know.
Hope everybody had a good weekend. It was a surprisingly good weekend of football. Not at all. When we asked the question on Friday on our way out the door, which team is more likely to surprise us when we come into work on Monday, ASU or the Arizona Cardinals?
Both was not the answer.
The both was not the answer.
Yeah.
Both was not really an option. And to be honest with you, neither one of them really were a great option because we expected both to have rough days. They did not. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by 3010 Weight Loss for Life.
Arizona Cardinals, 23-17 losers to the Baltimore Ravens.
They weighed in. They weighed in with a good effort. You know, I'm I said this to you in an email I sent. If I would have told you that played the what-if game, what if I told you the Cardinals would have had the ball down three early in the fourth quarter? You would have been like, I'll take that.
Sure.
What if I would have told you the Cardinals would have the ball with under 9 minutes left, down six, chance to take the lead? I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
What if I would have told you the Cardinals would have had the ball with under 4 minutes remaining in the game, down six with the chance to win the game, Cardinals have the ball down six, 4 minutes to go? I'll take it. Sign me up. Sign me up for every one of those scenarios. They didn't win. They didn't win. And I know the moral victory thing, and I understand that. They were competitive. They gave it up. They busted it. They played hard. They had chances to win the football game. Sure, there's a lot that has to be worked out with the Arizona Cardinals. Red zone efficiency has to be worked out. I get that. But damn, to go into that place, and you brought this up five times last week, how freaking difficult it is to go on the road and win in Baltimore in September.
Yes.
And for a rookie quarterback to go in there and win, because it barely ever happens.
Harbaugh's record in September at home, 17-2.
18-2 now.
The Ravens' record at home against rookie quarterbacks, 15-2. Now 16-2.
It's
after
hard.
Beating Kyler Murray. It's a very hard place to go. And I'll be honest with you, with the way that game started, the way Baltimore was cutting through the Cardinals' defense like a hot knife through butter, I thought this is going to be a long day. This is going to be a long day, and it's going to be one of those games. And I get it. At some point, and some fans are already there. You heard from them on social media, and quite frankly, so did I. Some fans are already to the point where they're not interested in progress. They're not interested in how things look better. They're not out interested in how good Kyler Murray
looks. Well, they're ridiculous.
Looks. They're just judging this solely, strictly off of wins and losses. And a team that doesn't have a win is a failure through the first two games of the season. And I think there's just so much more room for so much more nuance than that. And I think fans are depriving themselves of the opportunity to take joy out of the journey when they just judge it by wins and losses and not look at how these things are happening. The Cardinals never had a moment like that last year. The Cardinals of 2018 would have gotten their butts whipped on the road last year by Baltimore. Destroyed.
What about the Cardinals' record out east? You brought that up too. Like the Cardinals' record going out east.
1-8, average margin of defeat, 13 points per game.
Okay.
Now 1-9, but they didn't get blown out. They didn't get embarrassed. If anything,
game.
They gave us things to be encouraged by. It's troubling to me that more fans aren't encouraged by what they saw yesterday, to be honest with you.
Baffled by it. I mean, some of the tweets you were telling me about, I mean, I got some of them too. Like, I just baffled. Like, I'm not saying baby steps, but the first step is to be competitive. okay? And that will lead to more wins. Play in close games. Get a feel for these games. Let you understand what it's like to be in close games on the road, hostile environment. You may not win these games, but being competitive is truly the first step in turning around a football organization, turning around a program, being competitive, not getting blown out. This is something that we said from before camp even freaking started.
Yeah.
They need to be more competitive. Number one thing, just they need to be more competitive. I'm not looking for 10-6. I'm looking for 6 wins. Okay, I'm looking to improve the amount of wins, but be competitive in football games. They were competitive yesterday.
Sure.
They gave it a really good day. Oh, but they had chances to win the game. They're not good enough to win the game yet. That's fair. They're not good enough to win that game, but they were competitive.
And that's the point. At some point, and I don't know when that point is. Maybe it's at the end of the season. Maybe it's halfway through the season, 3/4 of the way through the season. At some point, having chances to win football games is not going to scratch the itch. Okay, I get that.
But that's not this year.
I understand that. At some point, it's going to need to be about more than that. Having a chance to win games will need to be replaced by winning games. I don't think it's reasonable to think that we should be there
now,
2 games into a rookie quarterback's debut season and 2 games into a rookie head coach's debut season. I don't think that's a reasonable point of view to demand that the Cardinals be there now. And look, if it takes all season, boy, fans really aren't going to want to hear this. Okay. That's probably you turned over a third of the roster if you're the Cardinals. You got a brand new head coach, got brand new quarterback, you got brand new players at multiple positions across the board, brand new defensive coordinator. Everything's new.
Player is suspended for 6 games.
And your best player on defense is suspended
for
6 games.
And one of your other best players on defense is out on injured reserve.
There's gotta be a little margin for error here. You know, there's gotta be gotta be a little learning curve here, a little room for growth. You can't, but the
effort was there. There were times last year we were like, oh my God, this team, they quit. They're not playing for Wilkes. They don't want to play for him. They quit. The effort was there. Right through the end of the damn game, the effort was there.
Yeah.
Until that damn play to Hollywood Brown iced the victory for the Baltimore Ravens, the Cardinals were playing their asses off to try and get a win.
Mm-hmm.
The effort was there, which is important because last year in the second game, they got shut out and beat up by the Rams. The effort's there. They're believing. They're buying into the system. Kingsbury and the coaching staff, these guys are buying in right now. And they played hard, and they played competitive. And if you want to call it a moral victory or not, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. All I know is this. I wanted a team that was going to be competitive.
Yeah.
And that team went out there yesterday, and they were competitive against a good team on the road, a team that was in the playoffs last year, and a team that was coming off of an annihilation of the Dolphins. And they went out there when they were competitive. I'll take that.
Cliff Kingsbury, post-game yesterday. Yes, some things could have gone better.
There are lots of plays to be made. I wish we would have done a better job. Overalls and offense finishing drives, but there's things we learned from that, and we got to get better moving forward.
And there is improvement to be made, even though they obviously don't want to lose.
You never like to lose, but you like to see that type of competitiveness, and it's a very good football team, like I said. It's 160-10 last week on the road. We knew it would be a tough environment, and we fought hard. We understand there's a lot of improvement out there, and we can get better this week.
And they will. Look, when they get Patrick Peterson back, they will. When they figure out their red zone, they will. When, how much of a balance they want to strive to get, I don't know. But if they are able to achieve that, Kyler Murray will get better. He still has some accuracy issues that plague him a little bit. And the roster building just needs to get better. They need a better offensive line, obviously. They need to make acquisitions along that offensive line and find guys that they can grow with. They might not even need to make a change at the offensive line with Justin Murray at right tackle. He was just okay.
I'll tell you right now, I'd be shocked if their first pick next year is not an offensive tackle, and I'll tell you that. I'll say that in week two. I'll be shocked if their first round pick is not an offensive lineman.
I would be too.
I have no idea how it's going to fall. Like, I almost would be shocked. Like, that is they need better offensive linemen. They do. Murray struggled yesterday. Struggled a little bit. He struggled. There was some center to quarterback snaps that weren't in sync. Might have been crowd noise, but they just weren't in sync. There was one fumbled snap.
Yeah.
So the offensive line overall has there was some false starts that really hurt them, holding penalties. So offensive line has to continue to improve, and that's going to be a work in progress.
But to me, the core of it, and I hate to make it about one guy, because I understand in a sport like football, it's never about one guy, but it is more proportionally about the quarterback than any other guy on the field. I would not feel this bullish, and I would not feel this optimistic, and I would not be throwing around phrases like moral victories, which, by the way, I don't like that phrase very much because I just don't think it applies. I would not be throwing around words like that if the quarterback weren't at the core of it. Kyler Murray made some throws yesterday. He can chuck that rock. He can just throw flat out, throw it.
Foot.
Okay, I mean, he's... Yeah, he leads the league in attempts, but he's also the first ever quarterback, the only other one other than Cam Newton, to have back-to-back 300-plus yards his first two times out the shoot. Man, how can you not look at that and go, okay, at least that box is checked, because that's a big box you need to check moving forward.
Josh Rosen threw for 300 yards how many times last year?
That'd be none.
And Kyler Murray's done it twice.
Twice.
He looks good to me. He looks like a good NFL quarterback. He's only played two games. You're right. He's only going to get better. I think they got the right guy. Time will tell. Can't cement it right now, but it looks like they got the right guy. He looks like a very good young quarterback.
Tomorrow, Ticket Window Tuesday, it's presented by Arizona Central Credit Union, giving you the chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Cardinals take on Carolina at State Farm Stadium this Sunday. Listen tomorrow at 7:15. 10:15, 12:15, and 4:15 for your chance to win. Speaking of unexpected things from the football gods this weekend, a huge win for the program, but some believe ASU's win over Michigan State needs an asterisk.
What?
Not us. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
So now this will be a 47-yard attempt by Coughlin to tie the game with 6 seconds remaining.
Looks like we almost look like we're offsides right now.
Tyler Hunter, backup punter, is the holder. There's the snap. Ball's down. The kick is on the way, and the kick is no good! He missed it, and time has expired!
Forks up, baby! Forks up! Forks up! ASU on the road takes down Michigan State!
That was insane.
Oh my God, that was so great.
That was insane.
You know, here's the thing about that kicker. That kicker was all Big Ten last year.
Yeah.
He had made 18 out of 22. He was 25 out of 25 on extra points last year. He had made his first 7 field goals this year. That kid was money. Money. Missed 3 field goals against ASU. Take it. I'll take it. Good win on the road for the Devils. I don't care how they got there, right? At this point, they won that football game. They found a way to hang around and win that football game. And just tremendous win. 3-0. ASU is 3-0, and they're ranked in the top 25.
Oh, yeah. We'll all take it. I mean, nobody will not take it, and certainly I'm not going to reject
Fantastic.
It because of how it ended. They played 28 true or redshirt freshmen in that game on Saturday. After the game, Herm Edwards was like, we started a freshman at left tackle. Who does that, right? He didn't say that, but I'll add that part. Who does that? Who starts a freshman, true freshman left tackle in a game like that? It was awesome to see. It was awesome to see Jaden Daniels, and I'm going to steal this thought. I'm going to borrow this thought from Doug Howler over at The Athletic, who in his really well-written piece the next day on that website said that we might look at that game a year from now, 2 years from now, and say that was the moment. That was the moment Jaden Daniels became Jaden Daniels.
Moment.
Right? This is the time when the freshman quarterback proved that he not only belonged, but was capable of things that previous ASU quarterbacks have not been capable of. Now, he didn't have a great game. The offense didn't have a great game. They were stymied the whole afternoon. But his ability to do what he did on that fourth quarter drive when they took the lead is not the stuff true freshmen typically do on the road in front of 70,000 hostile people, and yet he did it. He remained calm. He looked his coach in the eye. Coach, I got this. Don't worry about it. And he went off and did it. It was a most unexpected way to kick off the football weekend. That's for
first
sure.
First of all, hats off to Danny Gonzalez. My God, you're the best defensive coordinator in college football, in my opinion. You're amazing. Unbelievable to go stymie that team and shut them down and keep your team in the game. ASU got the ball 3 minutes and 34 seconds left. They're on their own 25-yard line. Let's not forget, they're on their own 25-yard line because there was a penalty, a hold on the punt. They would have been at the 40, but ASU had a hold on the punt. They go back to the 25-yard line. That kid, I was sitting there watching the game with my wife, and I'm saying, this kid was in high school 4 months ago. She's like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no, he was in high school like 4.5 months ago. She couldn't believe it. And then he goes out there, hits Kyle Williams for 5, hits Eno for 5. The play to Brandon Ayuk for 40 yards. The defensive back fell down just a little bit, and it allowed Brandon Ayuk to get open for a 40-yard gain. Great play. But then it's 3rd and 7, incomplete, and you're like, ah, okay. 4th and 8. And then they get a false start. Oh, my God. 4th and 13. Ah, terrible way for this game to end. And then the freaking kid runs for 16 yards. Mm-hmm. Somehow Michigan State decided to drop 8 players. They dropped 8 players. They only had 3. Jaden Daniels looked at that and said, seriously? Like, seriously? You're gonna drop 8? I'm just going to run for 16 yards.
Sure.
Unbelievable play. Runs for 16 yards. Then I love the next play where he runs for 5, rolls to his right. I'll take the 5 yards. Gets 5 yards. And then on 3rd and 5, he runs for 7. And I'm like, really so impressed with this kid's poise in this final drive. And Eno Benjamin with the touchdown reaching over. They get the lead 10-7. They end up winning the game. I'm so impressed by that kid in that final 3.5 minutes.
Now, you heard the Tim Healy play-by-play call along with Jeff Van Rapphorst. By now, we all know how that game ended. Michigan State lined up for the tying field goal. It was very odd to watch how indecisive they were at the end. Took them a long time before they decided to run their field goal unit out there for the initial
42
yarder. It was sort of watch that, the chaos ensuing from that. They miss it, or they make it, but 12 men on the field, so let's push them back 5 yards. Then they miss it, but we find out later Dean Blandino said, look, he leapt. Pac-12 sent out a statement late last night with a video demonstrating exactly what ASU did wrong. This is part of the new transparency from the Pac-12. And they said, yes, a penalty for leaping should have been called.
Not a reviewable play.
Michigan State should have been given an untimed down half the distance to the goal. I think it would have set him up around the 14-yard line, if I remember right. And one more chance to make that kick, and they were not. They were not given that opportunity, and ASU dodged a bullet. Doesn't mean the kid would have made it.
No.
Doesn't mean
ASU was off all day.
Doesn't mean ASU would have gone into overtime. Doesn't mean ASU would have lost in overtime. It presumes nothing. Just the fact that the league office, whose officials reffed that game, said, we missed this. We missed this, and there should have been one more untimed down.
Sucks for Michigan State.
Yeah.
I mean, sucks for them. You know what? Here's the thing. I mean, if you're Michigan State, I mean, honestly, did something work against you? Yes, it worked against you. But you know what? Do a better job to where that's not an outcome. You're at home against a freshman quarterback in his first true road game. A true freshman quarterback in his first road game. You're Michigan State. You're ranked in the top 25. That never should have come to it. It should have never come to it. Should never came to try and have to kick a field goal to tie the game and send it into overtime at the end. ASU did a great job the entire game defensively, held Michigan State in check. If I'm Michigan State, yes. Okay, I got burned by a non-call. Didn't happen. But, I mean, I got to look at myself over the course of the 4 quarters and say, what the hell did we do to deserve to win that football game?
Sure.
The answer is nothing. You did nothing to deserve to win that football
ASU's
game.
ASU's defense was outstanding. I mean, Michigan State was able to move the ball between the 20s, but they weren't able to do anything beyond that. When the game is on the line, you're dropping 8 guys into coverage, and you're daring Jaden Daniels to run. He's going to take you up on that offer. And as far as the missed calls go, Herm Edwards, a guest this morning on the Doug and Wolf show, actually from his press conference today, so look, these things are gonna happen.
Kind of in between, because Cam walked up in the box, but as he's walking, you know, the ball was about ready to be hiked, and so that's the issue. You know, he walked up in that neutral zone where you have to be set. He wasn't set long enough. They felt it was hurling over the guy. Okay, and you know, it happens. I can say some other things, but I won't. And they missed the call. okay, they missed a call. And sometimes they miss calls. I mean, I've been in games where they've missed some calls. And I understand it, and I don't say anything. I don't worry about it. I don't make a big deal out of it. It's just football. So, you know, sometimes things happen.
Mark D'Antonio talked after the game.
Extremely disappointed. I thought the crowd was outstanding. I thought the environment, again, was outstanding. And disappointed for our fans. And take responsibility for that.
Look, this happens.
Sure.
You win some, you lose some.
You know, there was a 3rd and 10 on that final drive in which the pass was nowhere even close to being caught, but Fields had a pass interference. I mean, the game's probably over right there if they don't get the pass interference, but they get the pass interference, they get the 15 yards, and that helped them too. Listen, things happen in a football game. Again, Michigan State, you know what? You should have done a better job. Sorry. Sucks for you. You should have done a better job to not put yourself in a position where you're down 3 to a true freshman quarterback on the revenge game. Where was the revenge from last year? ASU's now beating them 2 times in a row.
Yeah.
It's a huge win for Arizona State. And I'm taking nothing away from them. Nothing. Nothing away from ASU with that victory. They played their hearts out in that game. And that kid showed us a lot on that final drive. And that defense of Danny Gonzalez's was outstanding. So I'm not going to let that controversy affect anything. ASU has a win. Michigan State has a loss. It's not getting taken off the books.
Herm Edwards this morning on the Doug and Wolf show. How did your guys keep your cool, their cool, when the calls went bad on them?
We don't talk about them. It's just ball. We just play ball. I said, we don't get into officiating. We don't try to do that. They got a hard job, those guys. They never have a home game. And every time they officiate, they're on the road, regardless of where they're at. And according to what the call is, the crowd's going to react. But we don't get into that. I said, no one talks to the assistant but me. I'll say something. You know, I counted the 12 on the field. I knew that was taking place and asked him, you need to look at this. I think there's 12 guys on the field. I just want to make sure I'm right. You know, I kind of told them that way. And they looked in the booth, obviously, they were looking at it, and we were fortunate, you know, 12 guys on, and the guy had to re-kick.
It was interesting to hear the Pac-12, though, and this was the first time they had done this. Remember, people were calling for more transparency out of the Pac-12.
And they gave it to you.
And this was the guy who pushed for this, interestingly enough, is Ray Anderson, the athletic director at ASU. He's the one who suggested to the conference, we need more transparency. He's the guy who suggested to the conference, we need to do something else.
He's out in front
show.
Of it.
Oh, he's the reason it happened, right? So here's the Pac-12, late last night, 9 o'clock, sending out this press release with a video. Yep, we missed this one. This is one we should have called. We didn't. Just to all let you know, the discipline will happen to the official who missed it, and that's that. You move on. It sucks if you're Michigan State. But as you said, and I think you're absolutely right, there were so many other ways Michigan State could have won that football game.
How about not having 12 men on the field? Your field goal would have counted.
That'd be a good place to start.
How about not having 12 men on the field?
How about not dropping 8 guys in the coverage on a 4th and whatever it was when Jaden Daniels scrambled for 15? I mean, how about taking advantage better of the opportunities that you were given by ASU's defense when they were moving up and down the field between the 20s but unable to finish with touchdowns? How about your kicker who went 0-for-3 from field goals that, you know, beyond the scope of what happened at the end of the game?
Stop a 4th and 13, you win the damn game. I don't feel sorry for Michigan State at all. I mean, and listen, the confusion on that play was the offensive coordinator wanted to run one more play.
Sure.
And the head coach didn't want to run a play. He wanted to kick the field goal. So that's why they had 12 men on the field. There was so much confusion because the offensive coordinator and head coach weren't on the same page, and that's why they had 12 men on the field. Michigan State has nobody to blame but themselves. Nobody.
2 games into the season, and the Cardinals' offense doesn't look too bad. As long as they're not in the red zone, that is. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Our own Sarah Cazell is standing by with, since it was double the fun with the football this weekend, 2 surprising outcomes. No, just one?
Just one right now.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to today.
I'll put up the second one if you want me to. I just want to make sure you really want the second poll.
You do whatever you want to do.
Do what you do.
You do you.
You're in charge.
That little update wedge belongs to you, Sarah. Whatever happens in there is your domain.
Thank you.
All right, what's our one poll question?
One poll
right
question until we make it to in 3 minutes from now.
Yeah.
Yesterday's loss to the Ravens, you guys started off the show talking about this. Was it a moral victory for the Cardinals losing to the Ravens? 3 options.
Okay.
Deep exhale.
Is I hate the phrase moral victory one of the
Actually,
options?
It is. The last option is I am anti-moral victories, but still yes. Okay, so yes, it was a moral victory. No, it was not. Or I don't really like the concept, but it was.
I don't like the concept, but it was.
I disagree vehemently with the concept of a moral victory, but it was.
Well, let's. The reality is there is such a thing as a moral victory. Like, if you look it up, a victory that occurs when a person, team, or army loses a confrontation yet achieves some other moral gain.
Are you going Merriam-Webster on us?
I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm reading something.
Is it a dictionary, Bernsie?
The gain is often considerably less than what would have been accomplished if the main battle had been won. Otherwise, the result would be characterized as either a wash or a proper victory.
Only Gambo would look up moral victory on an Urban Dictionary.
It's true. There's such a thing. It's not like there's such a thing as, hey, we lost, but there's something to take out of it. So we could bash moral victories all day long, but they exist.
I'm not bashing. Sorry. I just don't like the phrase. I just don't like the phrase.
Sure, I understand that because you lost.
Is there a different phrasing that would make you feel more comfortable?
I know Wolf has a phrase for it. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but no, I mean, I understand the concept. It's just people hear that phrase and they just turn their nose up at it. Moral victory. Yeah, you know, they lost. There's no such thing as a moral victory.
Is there another phrase?
Did it provide hope for the season or hope for improvement?
Oh, there's no question.
There's no question.
That's not even debatable.
Yeah, no question.
Can't even make an argument against that.
So what are the results so far?
All right. 42% voted for that third option. I am anti-moral victory, but yes, it was one. 32% also said yes, it's moral victory. So only 26% are fully against the concept of it being a moral victory.
And I heard from every single one of those people for about 3 hours yesterday afternoon.
Listen,
all 26% of you, I heard from every single one of you.
It can ruin your life. Twitter can ruin your life. It can ruin your life.
It's fine.
You get these morons.
I shut it off and went and jumped in the pool. It's okay. It's no big deal. It was not that big of a deal. Cliff Kingsbury today, if we're talking about what didn't work for the Cardinals, obviously, and this is a very simple statement, but when you kick field goals of 22, 21, and 21 yards, that's a surefire recipe for losing. You're too close. You're too close.
Do you disagree with kicking those three field goals? Because
no.
If they don't kick those three field goals and they fail on a fourth down, you don't have a chance to win the game on those final two possessions.
I wasn't saying it as a reflection of whether I agree or disagree with the decision to kick. I'm just saying when you're converting your red zone opportunities at a 25% clip, you ain't gonna win. You ain't gonna win. I mean, it's just one of the reasons why they didn't. But Kingsbury was asked today if he considered going for it on any of the fourth downs. Here's what he said.
I did not.
What goes into that process? Is it just instantly field goal?
No, we have a system and have analytics involved and all sorts of things that we go through. And, you know, you're always going to have, after the game, thinking about different situations. But at those points in the game, that was the decision I made.
1-for-4 in the red zone against Detroit. 1-for-4 in the red zone against the Ravens yesterday. Kent Summers had a stat in his story this morning on AZ Central, and I didn't look up these numbers, but I'm going to trust Kent on this. 25% through two games. He says the worst NFL teams usually convert about 40% of their red zone opportunities. The best teams convert about 60% of their red zone opportunities. To me, Gambo, there are two issues here.
Yes.
With the red zone problem. Number one, are the Cardinals being too cute in the red zone by throwing it too much and not running it enough?
Yes.
That's issue number one.
Yes.
Issue number two is this belief that the Cardinals should be going for it more on fourth and goal from the 3-yard line or closer, because it's a 41%-ish success rate, and you'd be better off trying for the touchdown there rather than taking the 3 points. Those are two debates going on.
I disagree with that. Circumstances dictate whether you kick the field goal or not. The field goals have kept them in the games. They've kept them in it. They gave them a chance to win. They came away with a tie against Detroit. They lost to Baltimore, but cannot argue the fact that they had the ball with 9 minutes left with a chance to take the lead, and with 4 minutes left with a chance to take the lead. The three field goals kept them in a position to possibly win that football game. What I have a problem with is the play calling, and I'm going to explain this to you, and we'll see where you're at. There, before they kicked the 22-yard field goal, they had a 3rd-and-1. That was an incomplete pass. I believe that was to Fitz. Then when they kicked the field goal that made it 17-9, they had two plays that were both incomplete in the end zone to Fitz. I don't like this fade route to Fitz. It's not working. It's not working. It's not, there's no connection there. It's not happening. You are wasting plays on that fade route to Fitz. And here's another thing that baffles me. This baffles me. How can they be so damn successful on the two-point conversions? So damn successful. It's like taking candy from a baby. They've run two-point conversions, one in each game, and they were both easy touchdowns, easy two-point conversions. So if you're so good at these two-point, can you not run that same play, like, at the three-yard line? Like, can you not, like, run the same play?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got a play call in mind for the two-point conversion. Can you use that for the touchdown? Because these fades to Fitz, like, I don't, you can't run that right now. They need more time. It's a precision pass. It's got to be perfect. That's, you're wasting. Yesterday was three wasted plays on fades to Fitz. Last week against Detroit, I think it was two. I think they're wasting plays on these when they're on the 3 yard line.
Yeah, Kingsbury was asked about wasting plays in the red zone.
Yeah, I just, you know, speed of the game, different things that are going on out there. You get away with in college, you can in the NFL, and I have to do a good job of, not wasting plays when you're in the red zone or score zone. You got to make every play count and have a purpose for every play and can't just throw it up to somebody.
As far as the running versus the passing in the red zone, he was asked directly, he being Coach Kingsbury, today, if the analytics tell him to pass more than run when he's in the red zone.
I think we're going to make those decisions based on what we think is the best for our team in that moment. And in the first 2 weeks, very good front sevens, and we felt like we had a chance to hit some things in the passing game. Unfortunately, we didn't, but like I said, that was a decision we made.
Scott Bordeaux went and looked at the first two games. I'll credit him for doing this research. Through two games, Arizona has run 22 plays in the red zone. You want to guess how many have been passes? Two games, 22 plays in the red zone. How many have been throws?
I mean, this is a complete guess here.
Okay.
18.
Close. 16. 16 passes. 6 runs. That was part of what fans were clamoring for yesterday, what some media were clamoring for. Hey, run the ball. You've got David Johnson. He's a workhorse. He's a...
Is he?
6'1". Oh, there's some foreshadowing right there. There's some foreshadowing. Is he? Is he a workhorse?
Well, they must not think so. They're not running him, but they're not running him.
Well, they did for the one touchdown they got yesterday.
Yeah,
from that was from the 1 yard line. Yeah, and he walked in relatively unscathed and untouched. I have no problem with them kicking the field goals. I mean, especially when, you know, if they're chasing three touchdowns, okay, go for it. But at that moment, it's the opportunity to take a game that's still a game and keep it a game. Kick it. But it will continue to, you know, when you're talking about fourth and goal from the three, I read some website today said your success rate at that moment to score a touchdown is 41%. 41% on fourth and goal from the three or less. Will they look at those numbers? Will they consider those numbers? Or is, I don't know. I to me, it
depends on the circumstances.
Yeah.
You're right. If you're down by a lot, you go for it. But, you know, okay, so they kicked a field goal when they were down 7-0. Okay. That's when they kicked their first field goal. Then they kicked the next field goal when they were down 10-3. Okay, I agree with both of those, right? 7-0, kick a field goal. 10-3, kick a field goal. They kicked their next field goal when they were down 17-6. They're down 11 points. Getting it to 9 is what makes it a one-score game. So they made it 17-9.
No, getting it to 9. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you meant a 9-point differential.
Getting it to 9.
You meant 9. I understand now. I understand.
So if you miss the field goal, you're down 2 square. Like, every one of those field goals, I think, was the right call because it depended on the circumstance of the game. In the second half, when they kicked the field goal to make it 17-9, they were within one score. And if you go for it and you fail, which there's a 60% chance you're going to fail, well, now you're chasing two scores. That's a lot harder.
Kyler Murray is already making history after his first two NFL starts. And in the process, he's winning over some Hall of Famers. You'll hear why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
If you didn't hang around yesterday's game on Fox long enough, if you flipped the channel to another game or another moment or whatever.
You missed Terry Bradshaw.
You missed Terry Bradshaw.
I watched it.
So did I.
So when you put it in the email, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Howie Long questioned it? I'm like, why didn't you believe or something? But Terry was,
I got it right here. You know, this is immediately after the game. Hey, let's get some quick thoughts on the Ravens and the Cardinals. What'd you think?
I got to tell you, he's amazing. I've done everything I can to convince myself that this doesn't work, but after two games, look, I'm on the bandwagon. You got to. Why are you crazy if you don't?
Yeah. He needs help.
He's great. Well, he needs a lot of things, but one of the things you're finding out, and Kyler would be the first to tell you this, for a quarterback to throw touchdowns, it is very hard to do in the NFL starting out as a rookie. In time, he will. But boy, you're talking about fun to watch. Tons of fun.
Yeah, it was Howie. That was Howie Long in the background. There you go. Yeah, Howie, there you go. Come on, get on that bandwagon, Terry. Come on, get on it.
And Terry said, like so many veterans, older players, the old school guard, I was doing everything I can not to like the kid, right? He said something like that in the beginning. Yeah. I was doing everything I can to... I didn't want to believe in the kid. But now after two games, kid's throwing for 300 yards in each game. Kyler Murray through two games looks like a good quarterback. He looks like the future for the Arizona Cardinals. They might have something special here.
Kurt Warner on Doug and Wolf this morning.
The reason that they are having success on offense is because of that young man. He is making some throws and some plays that aren't really there in a lot of situations. That's really keeping this offense afloat. Been a lot of struggle. I think they're trying to find their way, trying to create some things that that haven't been open oftentimes. Obviously, the struggles in the red zone, I think, is a big indication of that, is they're trying to find their way in the red zone. But the reason that they're, they got back into the game a week ago and stayed in that game yesterday was a lot because the young man is just making some crazy throws.
Cam Newton is the only other quarterback in the history of the league to start his career off with back-to-back 300-plus yard games. Kyler Murray joined that club yesterday, 25 of 40, 349 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. He had a quarterback rating of 90.5 so far, and
he did it with no running game.
And he did it with no running game.
No, let's not like just bypass that. He did it with no running game. There were no threats to run the ball, and Baltimore knew it. There were no threat. He had to throw for 349 yards against the defense that knew that he was throwing because they couldn't run the football. If there was any threat of a running game at all, I mean, who knows what his numbers would have been? 400 yards? I mean, because there was just no threat. There was nothing. They couldn't run the football.
And when you say no threat of a running game,
none.
That just doesn't mean David Johnson or Chase Edmonds. That also means Kyler Murray.
Right.
He's had, what, 3 yards running yesterday?
I kept watching that game, and I kept wondering, is he seeing Lamar? Is he seeing that? Did he watch that? Did he see the improvisation?
Yeah, there you go. All right.
It's a big word.
You look up moral victory on urbandictionary.com. I'll handle things like improvisation.
Improvisation.
Well, it's a division of workload that we understand very well here on the Burns and Gamble. Yes. That's what we do.
Yeah. No, I never claimed to be smart. improvisation. Yes. I was wondering if he was watching Lamar Jackson improvise.
I was wondering.
And go on those runs.
Look, Lamar Jackson, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit. Lamar Jackson ran for an absurd 120 yards. Lamar Jackson right now is the 15th leading rusher in the NFL. Chew on that for a minute. He's quarterback, non-quarterback, whatever. There are only 14 guys who have ran for more yards than Lamar Jackson has so far this year. So,
yeah, the biggest play of the game for him was a throw down the sideline to Hollywood Brown with Brock covered all over him.
Yep.
So the biggest play he made was a pass play that kind of sealed the win for Baltimore.
Kyler Murray had 3 carries for 4 yards yesterday. I don't know. I don't know if he's deliberately trying to not use that tool in his tool belt because he wants to develop his other tools first. Right? If he wants to become a pocket passer before he lets those instincts take over and just start running all over I don't know. I don't know why he hasn't used. Maybe he's been told not to. Maybe he's seeing what's happening.
The training wheels are off. I was told before the season they'll let him loose now. He can do what he wants to do. I think he's just got it in his head. Here's the play call. I'm going to try to make this work. And when the play call doesn't work,
you know, he's throwing the ball away. Those runs are going to come. We know they're going to come. He's just way too talented. But listen, let's be honest, too. Like, he's also been sacked like 8 times so far through 2 games.
He was sacked 3 times yesterday, right?
I think he's been sacked that's 8
times 5
times
in the opener, yeah. I think that's
so
correct.
So 4 times. So 4 times a game times 16. He would be sacked 64 times if this pace keeps up. You don't want that many sacks on your quarterback.
Yeah, he was sacked 3 times yesterday.
He was hit. He was hit 9 times yesterday.
Yeah,
hit 9, sacked 3.
And then there's this, and this is a number that I don't know if it surprised me or not. I wasn't sure how to take it from Pro Football Focus. Highest percentage of uncatchable passes through 2 weeks. Cam Newton leads the way at 34.2%, followed by Mitchell Trubisky at 27.8%. Ryan Fitzpatrick at 27.3%. That might not last that much longer. Kirk Cousins at 27%. Kyler Murray, 22.9%. The fifth highest percentage of uncatchable passes. So then
I can count 4 or 5 on my hand through 2 games where he's just thrown it away out of bounds.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that is included in that.
Well, I'm sure Cam and Mitchell Trubisky and all those other guys probably have their fair share of those, too, okay. I would think.
It's
I mean, the younger quarterback is more likely.
Yeah. Listen, yeah. If it's not there, throw it away. Don't try to. Veteran quarterback might find a way to make a 7-yard gain out of something when he's just throwing it away.
So I just started tooling around on a stats page. Do you realize he's got more attempts than any quarterback in the league so far through the first 2 games?
Yes.
94 pass attempts.
Yep.
Leads the league in that category.
Yep. You don't want him throwing the ball.
I don't know if that's how I want Kyler Murray breaking into the NFL.
No,
I
mean, his run pass ratio thing is very, very pass heavy right now.
Very,
very,
very. Almost obscenely pass heavy so far. And by the way, your 10 personnel?
Yeah.
54 plays yesterday.
Woo!
What did we say was the over under?
You set the over under. I
did. Did I say?
Yes.
Did I say 54?
No, you were at 60.
Yeah, I think you were higher than that.
Was I higher than that? It was 56 last week. 54.
Was it 56 last week?
No. I'm sorry. I read the stats so wrong. I'm sorry. I butchered that. Cardinals ran 10 personnel, 32 of their 54 plays. Okay. My bad.
I read that wrong. What's the percentage? What's 32 of 54?
32 of 54 is...
That's what I want to know. Who puts out a nugget like that without giving you the percentage?
Well, go yell at Scott Bordeaux the next time you see him.
God. How do you give the number and not give the percentage?
Go yell. Well, I think Scott is assuming we can all do simple math on that one.
Here's what your mortgage rate will be, but I'm not going to tell you what your payment's going to be.
Somebody bust out. Okay, fine. 32 divided by 54. 59%.
Oh, what did you say?
I think I said 55%.
I think you said 60-something percent. You thought it would be higher than last week.
Yeah, it was 50. I can't remember. You asked me to set all these over-unders. I'm losing track of them. Someone's got to keep track of this stuff. Someone's got to keep me accountable. Someone's got to hold me in line, man. I can't just all willy-nilly can't come up with this stuff off the top of my head. 59% of the time they were in 10 personnel. 59%.
I think they were... I'll look it up. I think there was 64 last week.
I think they were, too. The game was much closer than people were predicting, but there were some key plays that ultimately prevented the Cardinals from pulling the upset. We'll go over those key plays coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.